This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
What am I drinking? Good question, Nick. I am drinking the Good and Gather. I think that's Kroger brand. Maybe it's Target. It must be Target. I think it's Target brand. Caffeinated pear hibiscus sparkling water.
Interesting.
What do you think about that?
Caffeinated water. I'm not sure. I think I just like my own regular water over here.
Yeah. So how this came up is I think Lindsay bought this on accident once and we thought it was weird. It's like, okay, caffeinated sparkling water, but it's like not even like LaCroix, right? It's like off brand to begin with. And then it's caffeinated. It is pear hibiscus flavor. And so Lindsay wasn't drinking it. So I took a bunch of it and I actually kind of liked it. The caffeine part was weird, but I found it's like, it's a good like afternoon caffeine because it's only 35 milligrams, which is like, that's more equivalent to like green tea than it is to coffee.
Got
so
it.
It's like a small dose of caffeine for when like, you know, it's after lunch, you probably shouldn't really be drinking too much coffee at that point. And it's refreshing because it's water. It's, you know, got it. I like the taste. It's pretty good. I've never been a sparkling water person until the last like year or two of my life. But I'm a fan.
I'm convinced. Go get me one.
Right now? I offered you one earlier.
Yeah, you did. And I said no. I had to be.
But you didn't know the details. To be honest. I just said sparkling water.
Yeah, fair enough.
But now you know. Maybe for round two.
Gotcha.
How's your still water?
It's great. It's fantastic. It's regular water. This is normally what I drink.
Can you give me a summary of it? Like I gave you a summary of my drink?
Yeah. I'll merely say this. The body wants what it wants. That should be a song.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's good.
The heart wants what it wants. Was that Selena Gomez?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Anyway, very similar. The body wants what it wants. And when it wants water and water goes down, there's simply nothing like water.
That is
so
true.
Good.
Especially when it's like cold, ice
man.
Cold.
You just feel it going down the esophagus. Oh my gosh. That's so good.
That's a really good point.
That's a good
Thank you
good
for
feeling.
Reminding me of that feeling.
You're welcome.
But we've been talking about this lately, or we've had a conversation or two about this in the last few months about how much our body knows what we need as far as nutrition goes. Now I was talking about this with a friend of mine who has Crohn's and how the foods that he doesn't like also have turned out to be the foods that are not good for his Crohn's disease and the symptoms he has with that. So he and I were having a good conversation about how like people with Crohn's or with diabetes, with like those kinds of what do you call them? Disorders, diseases, right? They know that like that their body knows what they need and they're very in tune with sensing it. But a lot of people who don't have those kinds of limitations don't know how to listen to their body. But we all should learn from those people in listening to our body in terms of what we need nutritionally.
Yeah. The body wants what it wants. That's how the heart wants what it wants.
Is it Selena Gomez or is it like Selena? Like the original?
I don't know.
Like anything for Selenas. Selena. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know. I do not know who you're talking about.
That's about all I know. She is a famous pop star who died, and they made a movie about her. In the movie, they go, anything for Salinas.
No, I don't think it's her. I think it's Selena Gomez. It could be Miley Cyrus. I'm going to embarrass myself, so I'm going to stop.
All right. The heart wants what it wants. Should
That's
I Google
right.
it?
Yeah, it's. I can't guarantee that it's an appropriate song by any means, but...
You anyway. Can't guarantee what's going to come up.
Yeah, I can't.
I Google this. Here the heart. The heart wants
what it
what
wants.
It wants. It's very
by.
Deep. I'll give you that much.
Who's it by?
Oh wow, Selena Gomez.
Let's go! I knew it.
There's no way she's the first one to say that, though.
I mean, no.
Oh, the chorus is pretty deep.
Oh really?
It's but the heart wants what it wants. The heart wants what it wants. The heart wants what it wants. The heart wants. Can you guess
what it wants?
Yep.
That's funny. I won't lie. All right. Thank you, Selena, for that.
All right. Yeah. So speaking of Selena, we have a topic.
Yeah. Great segue. Yeah. Digital minimalism is our topic.
Which technically has been the title of a show before. I don't know if you picked up on that.
Oh, it
with
has.
With TJ, yeah.
Yeah, but, I forgot about that.
So we might title it something different. Well, the titles always come after. It's just a podcast secret, you know. When you're a podcaster, a famous, rich podcaster like us, like we are, you know, you just, the creative juices flow and you just have a topic and you kind of title it by the topic, but then that topic doesn't really end up always being the title of the podcast. So who knows what this will be? Future us knows, but present us, we don't know.
Fair enough. Yeah, the idea for this topic, it's going to be a lot tied to the one that we did with PJ previously, I think. But it's based on this book by Cal Newport called Digital Minimalism.
Yeah, this book, which we'll talk about. Last week when we were podcasting, was sitting on my shelf. And you said, you have Digital Minimalism. And I said, yes. It is a book that I bought a few months back. We've both read some of other Cal Newport books. But I bought this book, intended to read it, and it just got, you know, it's on my list of books to read, but it just has not made its way to the top yet. So it was sitting there, and I'm glad you were able to benefit from it. You read the whole thing in, last week?
A week, yeah. I don't read quickly, so I spent a lot of time reading it this week. If that gives you an indication of how I enjoyed it.
You are making the most of your last week before going to seminary.
Indeed.
Wow. Good stuff. Well, tell me about it.
Digital minimalism. Okay. Sounds good. I'll read Cal Newport's definition of.
Yeah. Should we start with Cal Newport, who he is?
Yeah. Let's do that. That's a good plan. He's a good plan. Yeah. Cal Newport is a computer science professor at Georgetown. That's a, I think, an interesting snippet because, you know, he uses digital products for his job and is passionate about them.
I mean, that's his life. That's his world. That's his livelihood.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that says a lot about just this person's, you know, passion about using digital products from a minimalist perspective. So, he wrote a book called Deep Work that I think me and you both read. That is on living a life of focus rather than distraction, which is very much tied to this topic. We'll get into that in a bit. But he's just a very prolific writer also, in addition to his computer science day job, which kind of speaks to the fact that he lives a life of focus and of, you know,
deep work,
free from distraction.
Digital minimalism and So Good They Can't Ignore You.
That's right.
These are all titles of his books.
That's right.
Yeah, Deep Work, what I remember from that is, I guess it's ultimately about productivity, but from what I understand, there's probably a lot of overlap with his idea of digital minimalism, because one of the things he found, so I'll just kind of say a few things I remember from Deep Work, and that might kind of tie us into his ideas in general. One is just focusing for a long period of time. So one of the things that I think about this frequently in my own work, at the high school we have long periods. So we have four classes a day on an A day, B day schedule. And so as a result, there's pros and cons of that. The pro though is, as a teacher, I have an hour and a half, and depending on the day, sometimes a little bit more, of blocked out lesson planning time, right? And that is phenomenal for my productivity, because I can hone in a way that I can't if I have even 2 45-minute segments. So basically what I think this is in the book Deep Work, he talks about how difficult and how much energy it takes to change tasks. So if we are interrupted from the task we're working on, we might work in two separate 45-minute stints, but we are less productive than if we had that hour and a half. And it works even better, I think, with smaller spurts. So 30 minutes versus 3 interrupted 10-minute segments, way more productive, right? So he ends up talking about things like email and how email, like most people waste the majority of their workday just checking email because it's just constant interruption. So I guess those are the things I remember from Deep Work.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I'll just add, like, I think a core tenet of his thought is the value of the resource of time and how our culture tends to waste it, frankly, on, non-focused, you know, digital distraction. I think that bleeds throughout both books that we've read, you know, Deep Work and Digital Minimalism, of just using time in an intentional manner and how steps can be taken to do so. So, yeah.
And it's not so much about productivity as much as it is. I mean, it is, but like, I feel like productivity can be almost an exhausting word, but I found his ideas to be refreshing and they create more leisure in my life.
Yeah.
And they create more intentional time, and the time that I'm spending on things when I incorporate some of these ideas is more joyful. Even the time I spend working, I enjoy more because of that approach of kind of deep work, deep focus.
Yeah, that's right. That's a key thing too, is I think I've had this conception even a lot of times that like sitting on my couch and, you know, watching 6 episodes in a row of a series on Netflix is going to refresh me because I've been quote unquote busy during the other parts of my day. But in fact, that's not the case. You know, we should use the spare time that we have. And he talks a lot about actually the work life and deep work, but he also talks about in his thought of using our spare time more rigorously. And that actually makes us more energetic, or at least it tends to, rather than we would think. So,
yeah, that's in Deep Work or Digital Minimalism?
Sort of both, but both. Deep Work, okay. He talks about that a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. So how does this all come together in Digital Minimalism?
Yeah, so the specific topic for Digital Minimalism, the book, is this idea, of course, of digital minimalism. He defines it here, and we'll talk about it. I'm going to read it word for word, and then we'll discuss it a bit. So he says, digital minimalism is a philosophy of technology use in which you focus your online time on a small number of carefully selected and optimized activities that strongly support things you value, and then happily miss out on everything else. So focusing your online time on a small number of things that you've intentionally picked out only because they support things you value. So the key insight here is digital products. So we're talking about like TV, phone use, computer use. Those are tools that should be used only in service of the things that we value most. They're not, well, they're not our products that consume our day because we're on them all day. And it's not a space where we go and fill time that we haven't intentionally blocked out.
Yeah. So my mind goes in a few different places here, but one is I think of, you know, as we mentioned, this definitely ties into the conversation we've had with my brother PJ about these things. But one of the things I know he talks a lot about is the effects of technology and different kinds of technology and the effect they have on our attention and our productivity on all those things. And so what I notice when I look at this definition is you're focusing your online time on a small number of carefully selected. I think the word intentional, right? You're carefully choosing. You're choosing the tasks that you value. You're intentionally focusing on them. But what I find is that, and this is more true, I think, in some ways, the newer the technology and the more advanced the technology, these technologies are not designed in a way that focuses our attention on one thing. They're actually designed in a way that it's almost like there's a million different things on these technologies on the internet that is fighting for our attention. And that, I think that's, you know, epitomized in the way social media works, right? Everything you look at is literally, maybe figuratively is the better word, but fighting for your attention. And there's financial incentives tied to that for them to grab your attention and hold your attention. But there's all these competing forces at that. So it just leads to like a distracted world. Or a noisy world, as I see in the subtitle, choosing a focused life in a noisy world. I think distracted world could be just as fitting of a description for the world of technology.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So that's the first thing that kind of comes to mind. The second is I like your key insight here, and this relates to the definition, but digital use should be considered intentionally after it becomes clear what you value. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so, I'll just mention this offhand. I don't want to maybe get into it in too much detail, but one of the things he recommends up front is doing what's called a digital declutter. So he recommends spending 30 days free of technology, or at least as free of unnecessary technology. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the 30 days, not only do you just spend free time, you know, time away from technology, but you're supposed to have had reflected on the things that are most meaningful to you in your life. And you're supposed to have reflected on, you know, how I'm going to re-implement these things that I've given up over these 30 days so that they support the things that I value most deeply. So that's one thing he recommends right at the beginning is, you know, it requires this sort of philosophy of living that you have actually thought about what it is that you value. So for example, you know, if I really like to write, I want to write a novel. That's something that I really value before, you know, before I die, I want to write a novel. Well, I've got to decide, is social media, being on Twitter for 2 hours after dinner every night, is that serving that which I value in this instance? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's yes, maybe it's no. In that case, it's obviously no. Right. But, you know, that's an example of just thinking about discerning what it is that I really value and then letting the digital use fall into place after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think one of the things, one of the reasons that resonates with me is I think that the technological world, the digital world we live in, because it fights for our attention, if we don't know what we value, it's going to kind of tell us what we value, or it's going to keep us in this cycle where we value low things, right? We value very base level things, whatever it's showing us to us in the moment, whatever captures our attention, whatever's the most stimulating or entertaining, right? And those are relatively low, you know, on the hierarchy of values, right? And this is why I think that what I really thought of when I first saw this is I thought of my high school students and how I think this is why modern technologies and social media, smartphones, all these things in the digital world we live in can be so particularly dangerous for teenagers and children in general is because they haven't quite figured out what they value yet, generally speaking, in their life, right? And so they don't know how to intentionally use technology, to intentionally use these advanced technologies. And that can be said too for many adults, I'm sure, and all of us to some extent, because, you know, I know I'm not perfectly self-aware in identifying the things I value most or should value most in my life. But I think particularly so for youth, I see this as a problem.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, one of the things that comes to mind is, that's a great example with your high school students, but I think in general, I would say that the average, you know, person in our culture doesn't live an intentional life. And what I mean is, you know, their actions and movements throughout the day do not necessarily speak to what they value if you ask them what they value. So I think a lot of that is the, you know, consumption of time that these digital sources have taken. So, yeah, I mean, true for high school students for sure. I think for the most part, and then, you know, I would say just across the board, I mean, I know me as a 30-year-old, one of the reasons why this book was, you know, really inspiring to me was because I, like, this is me in a lot of ways, you know, I definitely feel like I waste my time every day in some sense,
right,
being on my phone or checking email or things like that, you know, and I could use a different, you know, sort of intentional lifestyle in a lot of senses. So
yeah. So what was that process look like? So how would you characterize your own digital use or your own use of digital technology? And then like, how did this book speak into that?
Yeah. So I have, let's see, I'll just mention a couple of things that I tend to do when I, you know, over this past month, I've been prepping to go to seminary, so I don't have a job. And so I've had a lot more free time. And so I've noticed that, while I haven't spent all day on my phone or on TV, you know, whenever I sit down and thinking about what to do next, I'll spend, you know, a few minutes here and there, several minutes, just compulsively checking my email is an example, you know, looking up, you know, who's emailed me. And even if they haven't, I'll, you know, just compulsively check my unread messages, even though they're the same that they were an hour ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'll pull up Instagram. That's another big one, you know, on social media. That's Instagram is my crutch on social media. I tend to pull that up, and there's the images and, you know, the whole, like, you can scroll through and see, you know, new videos, images every time you pull it up. You know, that's a time killer for me. So, surfing the web is another big thing on my phone, and pretty much all of it is on my smartphone is another element too. So, those things, I've been thinking about that a lot of, I understand that this is unhealthy. And I understand that the minutes add up and I'm wasting this time where I could be doing something more meaningful and focused. But I think just having a philosophy and plan for, you know, intentionally implementing my digital use. And well, even before that, you know, having understood just deep down what it is that I value doing with my time actually is really important too. So anyway, those are very sporadic thoughts, but that's kind of a landscape of my, I think, unhealthy digital use at the moment and my my hope for going for the future. Yeah.
And did the book convict you of any of those that is going to be the first to go, or are you just kind of
evaluating all of that right now? That'll be something to consider. One of the things, and I think we'll get into this a little bit more, but one of the things that a lot really resonated with me, but one of the things that resonated with me, but just being intentional about when it is I do the things that I need to do on my phone or check. Like, I've got to check email. Got it. I've got to check my texts at some point. Got it. I've got to, you know, making calls is a great thing. Got it. But can I just schedule that at an intentional time? Yeah. So I'm not, you know, ubiquitously doing it throughout my day.
Right.
Unnecessarily.
Well, that comes up in deep work, I think, too. The idea of scheduling email, as well as some other, it might be The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, which is another book I read, similar kind of vein. But they talk about, I think one of the things they say is, like, schedule twice a day to check email. Email by its very nature is not urgent. You do not have to respond. I mean, there might be some company cultures where there is a kind of urgency to it, but for the most part, if somebody's sending you an email, they could call you. And if it were urgent, they would call you. And so email by its very nature is the kind of thing that you can check twice a day during the workday. Schedule that time and you'll find your time free to do so many other things.
Right. Yeah.
That's why, I mean, the radical example of this is in Tim Ferriss's book. It's called The 4-Hour Work Week because he literally consolidated his 40-hour work week into 4 hours.
Wow.
From 40 to 4 hours. He doesn't promise that actually, he makes some bold claims, but he doesn't, the expectation is not that everybody can get down to four, but that's how drastic, like, some of these things that we think are necessary, email being probably the most obvious example of it. It's necessary, right? But we spend, because we're constantly checking it and interrupting things, we spend far more time on it than we even realize. And if we schedule it, we can be more productive in less time actually on our email.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
So email is a fascinating one. And that's why I always say too, like, I always recommend, don't have email notifications on your phone. I know a lot of people who do. And those are usually the people who are always checking their phone because you're always getting emails. And guess what? They're not normally urgent.
Right. Yeah, I can't tell you. I bet 80%, I mean, it's really high. I bet 80% of my emails are ads that I've just incidentally subscribed to.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been doing lately is, like, unsubscribing from all of these things one by one. It's a lot. So,
you know what I learned from our Colloquium Show email? Total tangent here. But for a while, we were getting, I told you about this, I might even say this on the air, we were getting, like, dozens of spam emails a day on the Colloquium email. And what I did, and I think this solved it, I quit putting our email in our episode notes. And it almost completely stopped. So there's some bot out there, or bots, that are just scanning, like, podcast show notes for emails.
Wow.
Amongst other things, I'm sure. And then sending these spam emails out.
Got it.
Which is nuts. So yeah, I mean, there's, and that can be with other emails as well.
Like, yeah.
My Gmail, my work email. I do a pretty good job, particularly with my work email, of staying unsubscribed from things if I'm realizing I'm not actually interested in these emails. But my personal email could definitely do a better job.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah, you definitely could.
Thanks. Yeah. You've been reading my email? That's a crime,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Oops. What about your digital use?
Yeah, so about that.
Get off your phone, man.
Let me finish this text real quick, and then I'll tell you about my digital use. No, I'm just kidding. So as you know, I, over a year ago now, bought the Wyze phone, which is this dumbed-down phone, and I wasn't convinced when I bought it that I was going to use it, but I bought it because I listened to kind of the vision of the company, and you know, they were actually on Pints of the Quietus, and the guys who started this, and I believed that even if I didn't end up using it, I wanted to support what that company was doing, so I bought it. And I actually did end up using it. So I've used it. What I basically do is I switch back and forth between my Wyze phone and my iPhone. I have a SIM card. The SIM card can go back and forth, same number, everything. And I do that because there are certain obligations that I have that I just haven't found a way yet to do without my iPhone. I say haven't found a way yet because I believe that, you know, maybe there is a way and there will be a way. But at this point, particularly GroupMe, I think becomes the biggest one that with coaching, with being in charge of various different extracurriculars at the school, I just need regular access to GroupMe in order to stay in the loop. And at the moment, I've deemed that convenience of having it on the phone, even though there are other ways to access it, necessary. I'm being very precise in my speech, the way I'm saying that. Thank you, Jordan Peterson.
Indeed.
Now, I found something recently on my iPhone that's helped me out a lot. Because when I use the iPhone, as I currently am using it, I have found that what I struggle with particularly, because I've gotten off most social media, I have LinkedIn, which really isn't a major temptation. Although even then, if I'm bored, I can find myself just going to LinkedIn. Yeah. Not because I'm looking for a job or networking, just because it's something to look at and scroll through, right? And Twitter, but Twitter, for whatever reason, I have an account and I don't use it, and it's not an active temptation for me. So I probably should and can delete it, but it just hasn't been urgent because I'm not going on Twitter. But so I've virtually eliminated social media. YouTube becomes the problem, though. But I found recently a way around this because, you know, I don't struggle with watching YouTube too much on a computer typically. It's just something about the proximity of your phone and having it always on you. The second, you know, you have that downtime, pulling it up and can delete the YouTube app, but then you still go into, you know, Safari and type the Y and it finishes YouTube for you and you're already there quicker than the app. So what I found that helps is there's an app called ClearSpace. I don't remember how I heard of this somewhere. And basically with this app, you can do two things. One, you can limit your time. So you can set a time budget, which say is 10 minutes a day, or two or three, you can choose how many 10-minute segments you want to spend on YouTube per day. And after that time, it locks you out. When you open the app, when you open YouTube, if you want to watch YouTube, you can. What it does is it makes you do a breathing exercise, and gives you like an inspiring quote. So what it does, and this is, you know, I think this is well researched, right? They know what's going to help. It slows you down because so often it's just in that instantaneous moment we pull it up and then we get lost in a cycle of just stimulation.
That's right? Good. Yeah.
And so it slows you down, and I found that helpful. I've also found that through this app, I could just block YouTube straight up. So that's what I did. And now I haven't been on YouTube on my phone since I blocked that a week or two ago. And YouTube is really hasn't been an issue since then. You know, I might find ways around it in my weak moments, but I found that to be really helpful. So I'm pleased. I think that there is a movement between things like the Wyze phone, between these screen time savers. I think that for the most part, they aren't enough yet because the vast majority of screen time apps and things like that are just not effective.
Right.
And that's why people like PJ just get rid of it. He's actually never owned a smartphone, but many people are just getting rid of smartphones altogether because there aren't really effective ways to use them moderately.
Yeah, it's a strong temptation. It can be. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Cool.
All right, so what is Mr. Cal Newport, Dr. Cal Newport?
Is he a doctor?
Tell us about implementing digital minimalism.
Yeah, so he talks about several practices, is what he calls them in the book, for just living a more focused lifestyle in general. We can reiterate through some of these, and particularly, you know, through the digital minimalism route. But the first thing he mentions in the book is spending time alone, the value of solitude. I think in the book he talks about, I know you have a different definition here, but he talks about it as time with only your thoughts and no one else's thoughts intruding. So no podcasts, no music, no one else around, just you, your thoughts. That's what he, that's I think more or less a secular definition, but that's what he uses for the definition of solitude. Yeah. Spending time there.
And that's important to you.
Yes.
Detox.
That is important for living a focused lifestyle, meaningful lifestyle. That's his central tenet, is digital minimalism allows a person to live a more meaningful, satisfying, focused life, which is the end goal at the end of the day. Not necessarily being off digital products for its own sake. You know,
That's a really good distinction.
Yeah. That's the whole distinction of digital minimalism, is using those tools to serve the purpose of living a meaningful and satisfying life. And spending time alone, solitude is a route to doing that. Digital products tend to eliminate solitude. And he claims that this time of history, more than ever, is trying to eliminate solitude altogether, you know, with our smartphones. So anyway, solitude.
Yeah.
Valuable.
Mad times we live in, Harry. Mad.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I guess on solitude, I'm going to take this in a little bit of a spiritual direction. We're not going to make this spiritual direction. I am going to spiritualize this a little bit, this idea of solitude. So sorry to our secular listeners, but
no, we should, because Cal, he does write this book from a secular perspective, so it does need a little bit of spiritual flavor to it.
We gotta baptize it.
That's right.
All right. But I recently encountered a definition of solitude that totally rocked my world, actually, and I, for the life of me, cannot remember where. But I remember, so for the longest time, it wasn't you. It was smarter than that. Right. For the longest time, I'd heard this word solitude, particularly it comes up in the saints, right? And I remember most recently in the last year reading the, he's not a saint, but, you know, it's a great spiritual author, Thomas Merton. And in reading his story, he just talks about this love for solitude, right? And I never really strongly identified with, like, I get it. Like, I'm a little bit of an introvert, like I like alone time, but like, it was just this like passion for solitude, right? For being alone with his thoughts. And what I encountered recently that changed my perspective on this, because, you know, part of me is like, okay, I know I'm supposed to like solitude because the saints do, but like, you know, I pray and stuff, but like, it's not this thirst that I have for solitude. Nor do I find myself, when I'm alone with my thoughts, feeling this great consolation because I'm in solitude, right? That's more what it is. It's not that I don't seek it out, but like, I don't feel what I think I see in the saints. But the definition I encountered, and maybe I'll put it in the show notes if I remember it or something, but was that solitude is not about being alone with our thoughts. It's the place where we are alone, where we can encounter our brokenness before God. And so solitude isn't this place of like peaceful bliss and contemplation as much as it is, this is the place where we set aside all worldly distractions and be who we are before God in our brokenness. And that is a necessary step to sanctity, essentially. And I just thought it was powerful. It encouraged me in my path to solitude or in my path to holiness to think of solitude as that. And I think it's the same in the secular mindset, right? Is we need to remove these distractions to to encounter who we are before God. I know I said secular and I'm saying before God again, but I'm just doing it, okay? And discover what we truly value.
Yeah.
But we have to take that time in solitude in order to do that and in order our lives properly.
Yeah, this is very much tied to, I think, just the reduction or the increase, I should say, in atheism in our society. I would imagine is just the lack of solitude that people spend, I think, with their time. And, you know, to me, solitude is a central place where one encounters God personally, you know, and without solitude, it makes it hard. It makes it difficult to hear his voice. So that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. What else do we need to do?
He says, one of the things he says is leave your phone at home, which I really like this. And, you know, you've put the obvious question here of, oh my gosh, what if there's an emergency? What if I need to contact ABC? And he does talk about that right at the beginning of the book, but or right at the beginning of the section on this. But, you know, that's a relatively new concern. Like, what did we do 20 years ago when we didn't have cell phones? You know, we weren't freaking out that people were walking around without phones. Mm-hmm. You know, so is it an inconvenience? Absolutely it is. And he mentions too, I think this is good. I think this is more what I would do, to be honest. This suggestion, like, just put your phone in your glove box. Don't take it out. You know, if you're worried about, you know, there being an emergency or something. But, you know, he suggests leaving your phone at home because obviously it tends to be a distraction, especially when you're going someplace to hang out with people or to engage in social activities. It's like, how often does the phone just come out of the pocket and into the hand? So,
yeah, I think leaving in the glove box is a great compromise because, you know, you go somewhere, you're driving, assuming you're driving a car, right? Drive everywhere with it. Your phone is now going to be in proximity where if there's an emergency, you can go get it, right? Particularly for social things. Like, sometimes you'll need to take your phone with you, of course. Like, but one, you know, it's still there and you're separated from it. This is better than just putting it in another room, right? It's removed, another level removed. But two, like you said, I think it is important to push back against, we need all these things because we live in a world that makes us think we need it, but we've also survived, like you said, for centuries and centuries without these basic things that we, or without these not so basic things that we consider basic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. For me, I know if, I mean, I think I would try this, but for me, I can definitely see myself if I'm putting my phone in my glove compartment, like just reducing each and every time I get out my phone, just reducing the requirement of a quote unquote emergency. You know, so I just, in my mind, I can make the excuse of, oh, well, I really need to text someone right now because I just thought of it. And what if I forget? And I better just go ahead and do it or else I'm going to forget. It's like, that. No, that's not an emergency. You know, so I could definitely see myself making the excuse of getting out my phone in my glove compartment if I do end up taking it with me.
Yeah.
You know? So that would be the one thing I would say to that is, like, I mean, know thyself, right? I'm just not sure that would work for me. I think I will try it, but
Can I say something radical?
Sure.
I don't really know what's going to come out here, but
how do you know it's going to be radical? All right.
I have a radical idea that I haven't vocalized. I think that when we think about this world we live in, that we're so immersed in things that we think these things that human beings have never had before are absolutely essential. Well, and now we've built this world around them that make them necessary, right? Take the smartphone, perfect example, right? Most human beings never owned a smartphone. They've been fine. Now, we live in this world where we all have smartphones. We're experiencing a lot of really concerning side effects of owning these devices. But we live in a world where, I mean, somebody who says we can't function without smartphones, like, you can have an argument there, but they've got a real point, right? There's a reason we find it so hard. I know a lot of, like, myself included, I know there are a lot of people like me who, if I could throw this thing away today and operate in the world functionally without it, I would stop this podcast and do it right now. Mm-hmm. But we've created this world that makes us so dependent on these technologies around us. Well, now we see this movement of digital minimalism. We see people are waking up, secular and religious, to the concerns, and AI is taking off, right? And at an incredibly exponential rate. And there's a lot of people saying, wait, hold up. You know, there's strikes going on. There's all sorts of things. People are going, wait, hold up. So my radical thing is that I think we're really just, I don't know what's going to happen. But I think that we're trending in a semi-apocalyptic direction in which we're going to have to make a choice to live with artificial intelligence and let it be an intimate part of our lives, or to reject it all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that's going to come, but I think that's the direction we're headed in. That's my radical statement.
Wow. That's interesting.
But does that make sense? Like, can you see where that's coming from?
I think so, yes. I mean,
I don't like, what can I do? What can I do if I want to solve it? Like, the digital minimalism, to me, it's just... Sometimes it feels like it's just putting a Band-Aid on the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to say that that's not the case because, you know, clearly these technologies have positive uses. No one would argue that it's not a positive thing to be able to carry a phone around, you know, to contact someone from across the world. You know, that seems to me like that is a positive thing. You know, that's just an example of how there are positive uses. So there's got to be a way to isolate positive uses with extreme negative side effects here. You know, maybe there's not, but I just feel like there.
Yeah,
I feel like there could be, and mm-hmm. this is a path forward. You know.
Yeah.
Does take discipline.
I see what you're saying, and maybe like the Wise phone is an example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah, I think maybe it just needs more momentum, right? Because until there's enough people buying into the idea of I want to intentionally choose how I spend my time. I don't want my devices to choose that for me.
Yeah.
Right. Until there's enough people doing that, we're just going to keep these kinds of devices that enslave us are just going to become more and more a part of our life.
Yeah.
But maybe I think that's a good point. Maybe there is a way forward, but the way forward involves enough people being willing to step out in a significant way of the digital bubble.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we weren't going to talk about AI. I know that's something we alluded to, but it just makes me think of, you heard Bishop Barron talk about Miss Davis?
A little bit.
Because I haven't seen this yet, but it sounds really fascinating. But that's essentially it, is she has to, everybody's immersed in this AI world and she resists it, right? And she has to step outside of it. And it's kind of apocalyptic, but
yeah, we'll have to talk about AI whenever we get the chance next, because the world seems to be currently captivated by it. It seems like every time you turn around, there's another entertainment form that's coming out about AI. So
yeah,
and
I have thoughts, as you might imagine.
Ah, alas, we'll have to hear them.
But another time.
Another time, indeed.
Ah, fine. I'll wait.
okay, next one. Leave phone at home. That was the we talked about.
Yeah, just touch on whatever you want.
Yeah, I don't really have... He mentions writing as a valuable tool. I don't have a lot to say on that. I think it's true. I do like writing.
Is good.
Yeah, it's
I agree.
Yeah, but I think usually it's a non-digital form too, just to clear your mind and to gather your thoughts. So did you have any thoughts on writing?
No, I'm more interested in walking.
Yeah, I was too. So I'm glad you were going there. Yeah. So he does mention walking as taking time periods, like long periods to walk, is a really, really powerful thing for living a more focused lifestyle. And one of the reasons he mentioned, he cites several people, famous people that went on walks frequently, one of which is Henry David Thoreau, who's a famous philosopher and,
big Walden guy.
Yeah, big Walden guy. Steve Jobs was also apparently a very big walker, and he would invite people on walks to discuss ideas with him if they wanted to talk with him or whatever. Are you sinking right now?
I am sinking.
The chair is going down. All right.
Yep. I'll move back up. Keep going.
Yeah, and I also think too, I want to speak experientially of walking. I have recently become a huge walking fan just in my in the last couple years of my life. And there's something just really like I don't know, restful about being out in nature. One, it clears my head and allows me to think a little bit better for some reason, to pray a little bit better for some reason. I tend to like praying the rosary walking now.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing I haven't tried is walking while, you know, having a conversation, which I think I would enjoy, but maybe we'll have to try that sometime. But anyway, that's a lot of thoughts. Give me your thoughts on what you think about walking.
Yes. I too like walking. I'm curious for you, because I know you're a runner and a soccer player as well. Does walking replace your running at all, or is it like a totally separate sphere?
It's a separate thing, I think. Yeah. Sometimes, like if I am feeling tired or whatever that day and a rest day, I'll walk instead of running. But mostly, it's a different thing.
Yeah. But that could also be a day that you otherwise wouldn't do anything, and so you're walking instead of doing nothing.
Yes,
rather than instead of running.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's probably true for me as well, is normally if I choose to walk, it was walk or stay inside, not walk or run.
Right.
But that's probably different for different people. But yeah, I think walking is the best way to pray the rosary. I think lately, the last few years in my life, if I'm just sitting still, I have a really hard time with it. But walking, I was hearing Mark Barnes on New Polity was talking about this recently. There's something fascinating about the relationship between the body and the mind that walking kind of integrates in a beautiful way. It kind of busies the body so that the mind can go to work,
right,
in a healthy way, right? And I think when we're sitting, our body, it's like our body and mind and can become at war, where the anxiety, which we actually feel from the body a lot of times, more so than from the mind, right? Even if thoughts spur anxiety, our body can carry anxiety in it, and then that can kind of cloud your mind. Whereas walking can free the body, not free the body in a Gnostic sense, but like it busies the body,
right,
so that your mind can actually go to work. And it brings this harmony, I think, to body and mind. And
yeah, that's good.
Just reflecting on that, a lot of that credit goes to, you know, Mark Barnes and New Polity. But rosary, I do have a lot of phone conversations while walking, and I find that really fruitful as well. I think particularly with PJ, some of my most intellectually stimulating conversations happen with him. I'm sorry. Yours are intellectually stimulating too.
But PJ,
I mean, like, the words he uses are massive. Like, they're at least four syllables. So
I usually use like four letter words sometimes. Yeah.
You keep it simple.
Yeah, that's right.
But like when I'm like walking, it just gets it gets me into the zone where I can keep up with him mentally. Mm-hmm. So that's nice.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So yeah, walking is great.
Good stuff. Don't click like is another thing. Did you want to stay on walking for a second? I saw you about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it just to tie it back to digital minimalism, like it's hard to be immersed in digital technology when you're walking too.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
It's also a way to build solitude, I think, also.
What do you think about this? I'm sorry, I'm going to stay here a little longer. What do you think about, I go back and forth on this, walking and listening to something, like having AirPods in.
Yeah, I used to do that. I haven't done that lately. I think that's good. I mean, that's not solitude as defined by Dr. Newport here. But I think that's fine. I mean, I think that is a way to focus on what it is that you are listening to. So, I mean, that seems like if you want to listen to an audiobook or something, it seems like a great practice.
Yeah.
I used to love, like a few years ago, listened to an Agatha Christie novel while I was walking. Mostly would walk around my apartment complex and listen to it, and I really enjoyed that. So
yeah, I see a lot of people like in grocery stores and just out in public doing that, and I wonder if that's that's healthy. No, that's what I was gonna say.
I personally don't like that, just because I feel like that's a time to be like focused and intentional with people that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
And that always seems to me to be like, you know, sort of like an off-putting thing.
Yeah.
You know, when they're not focused on their surroundings. But for me, like, going out to walk and listen to something is mm-hmm. different.
Yeah.
You know, that's an intentional exercise.
Yeah. It's not a time when you should be focused on something or someone else.
Right.
Okay. All right. Agreed. Don't click like.
Don't click like.
What's this about?
Yeah. I think it's just the purpose of this is clicking like was a very, very revolutionary thing in social media. It's actually what revolutionized it because, mm-hmm. You know, it gave social media that addictive quality of checking it all the time for something I can like, you know, how many likes did my post get, that kind of a thing. So mm-hmm. Not clicking like is a challenge to avoid becoming addicted in that sense to the social media.
Mm-hmm. You know the best way to not click like?
Don't open it.
Don't, I was gonna say, don't have social media.
Don't open social media.
If you don't have it, don't you even can't have open it. Yeah, if enough. You don't open it, you can't click like. Problem solved. Just go read books like Digital Minimalism.
That's right.
Cal Newport.
Yeah. Just go read books.
Okay, we already talked about scheduling email. So scheduling texting and calling, same idea?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Scheduling a time when you're going to answer and send texts. Also calling. He mentions an example in the book of this guy who literally does not answer calls unless it's at 5:30 on his commute home every day. It's literally every day, and what he says is if someone wants to talk to him about something, he says, sure, give me a call at 5:30 tomorrow. Hmm. Sure, give me a call at 5:30 today. Sure, I'd love to talk. You know, and he's radically available. I mean, he literally is available every day just at 5:30. Yeah. So I think that's, for me, that's a really, really cool example of just, you know, focusing your digital use intentionally.
So am I only going to be able to call you at 5:30 in seminary?
That's right. It gets complicated, right? Like if someone's not available at 5:30 every day, you can adjust from there. But
right. And your schedules are going to be different. Like there is some, that principle can apply differently to your own schedule.
It's got to be applied personally. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I like that. Especially scheduling texting time. This is one of the things I find, like, especially when you're with people, that you care about, and when you're intentional, you forget about texting, right? Because you're not concerned about texting people because you're with the people you care about. But then you sometimes feel it's like, oh, I like actually have some things I need to respond to. But you don't want to like remove yourself from being present. So I think of that. And then I also think of just the opposite of people who, you know, just they see the text and they need to respond to it and they're not being present because of that. So right. I think scheduling texting can just allow us to be present. And honestly, it might help. Like I just noticed somebody who texted me something telling me news that was exciting that I should have responded to the same day. I realized that it had been 2 or 3 days and I had not responded to them. And so I had to respond to that today. But I think if I scheduled time, then you can, you know, you have that structured time. You go through, oh, this was from 2 hours ago. I need to respond. Like you respond to everything, then you put it down. You move on with your life. I think that would help even with keeping up with it, ironically enough.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Just by scheduling it and limiting, and that would actually limit the amount of time you spend on it, just like with email, but increase your actual level of communication.
Yeah, agreed.
What else?
Last one, implementing leisure in one's life. So one of the things that he mentions is that if we're going to reduce our digital use, it's really important that we, again, going back to the things that we value, it's really important that we have a replacement for that thing, for that digital use with valuable uses of our time. And he mentions leisure, engaging in leisurely activity. We talked about this before. But he loves the idea of being more rigorous with one's leisure time rather mm-hmm. than just sitting there like a zombie watching Netflix. That's not leisure. You know, he mentions building something, you know, engaging in a craft.
Yeah.
You know, more or less rigorous activity to energize the soul, if you will. Doing stuff for its own sake.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that you assume I have something to say.
You're just like, go ahead, your turn. No, I do. I think that the quality of my leisure and the quality of my work is something I've been thinking more about lately. And I know we've talked about four and we'll have future conversations on, I'm sure, as well. But yeah, it's just not all leisure is the same. Some leisure is restorative to your energy and your mental and physical faculties, and some is hardly at all, right? The zombified Netflix or YouTube watching, right, is an example of that. And I don't know. I think there's a lot that we could talk about there. But maybe that's another podcast as well. But yeah, I think just being intentional about leisure definitely is important.
Gotcha. Yeah, we've had a podcast on leisure not too long ago, right? Pretty sure we did.
Yeah.
I thought we did.
Yeah, probably.
I can't remember where that's in now.
I know it's come up on multiple podcasts.
I think we have talked about it some. So anyway, maybe refer to that.
All right. It's now time for a segment of Colloquium that I like to call Hot Takes.
Hot Takes.
That's their an song? Original phrase, by
their
the way.
Song? What's I'm just picturing, I can literally hear in my mind like a little like.
Is it a song for real?
No, I don't think it is. Okay. I'm just saying, like, I can picture having, like, a...
Oh, I
you know
see.
How some shows will have, like, that little, like... It's like a sound effect thing. Uh-huh. Like, you could have somebody saying, like, hot takes.
Yeah, like the Catholic talk takes. Show, they do, like, the Inquisition where they have, like, the sword slash... have you heard
and
that?
It makes a sword slashing song. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. It's cool. We should have something like that.
I'll call Dan Fox and he'll make a little
he'll cook
hot
us up
take
something,
intro
yeah.
or something. Yeah.
Anyway.
That would be really cool, though.
Yeah, it would.
All right, number one, hot take. We can just... go through these pretty quickly.
Yep.
Keep or delete social media?
I would say, oh gosh, I can't go through this quickly. I would say it depends, but veer towards deleting it.
Delete.
Gotcha.
All right, next one.
Great, we're just really
that
gonna
is
go
a hot
that.
Take. All right. Best way to get news? ?
I would prefer, I have started relying heavily on Time Magazine, actually, which I like. But I would prefer like a weekly paper is what I would prefer. Yeah. Hard copy paper. I can't say that is the way that I will eventually end up doing it, but that's what I would deeply prefer.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need to go back to print news.
Yeah.
I think that it solves so many of the problems of the way of just modern technology. I think that, so one time when I was in Colorado for about a year or so, I ordered the Wall Street Journal and I got that delivered to my house every day. And I loved that. I didn't read, I think I discontinued it just because it was a thick paper and I was reading less than 10% of it and not every day, but I actually really found that fruitful for a time. And, I think, unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder to find print subscriptions. And even in when I've tried to, I've found it's really difficult to order just a print. And just financial incentives, they make it like really cheap to get the digital version. And it's just, unfortunately, the world is not trending in that direction. But
right.
This is where in my apocalyptic kind of predictions, right, there's going to be a world in which you either choose to live in the AI world or you choose to live in the normal world. And I think when that time comes, there will be plenty of newspapers in the normal world. But that's not even my hot take.
Gotcha. Smartphone?
That's
that your
my
hot
like
take?
Normal take. No, no, no. Okay. No. That's my normal take on news. My hot take is just going to be quick. Dan Fox, our old producer, our former producer, his hot take on this, which I kind of like, was just don't read the news. And I think he sent me an article about it, ironically enough. Not a news article, but he sent me an article about it that essentially made the case that everything that you really need to know about what's happening in the world, you'll find out from other people.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. I think there's a case to be made for that. Not necessarily advocating for it, but I think that if you totally eliminated reading the news, you'd find that you are still very much more in the loop than you would ever imagine.
Interesting. Let's leave it at that.
All right, smartphone. Hot take on having a smartphone.
Yes, with a lot of caveats.
Okay. It's a lukewarm take.
I do think here, I'll elaborate. I think yes, smartphones are can be a positive tool, but I think they should be reduced to lesser uses, fewer uses.
Yeah. And I would be skeptical of how possible that is and how feasible that is for many people.
Fair enough.
So I don't think I have anything new to say about smartphones as far as a hot take, unless you want to, if I'm trying to get clicks, I'll say, my hot take is take your phone now and burn it.
Yep.
That's my hot
take. Throw it out of the window.
Yep. Just kidding. I don't even have to say just kidding with that because nobody's going to do it.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. Just kidding. Don't go burn it.
Okay. I don't even have to cover my bases. But yeah. All right. Well, good conversation. As always, I feel like it's just beginning. So for you, our listeners, build on this conversation. Go talk about it with your friends and your communities. Think about it. Pray about your own digital use. Check out Cal Newport's book. And I think you'll benefit for at least reflecting on this a little deeper. And we're not PJ. We're just two normal people. So take it from us. Well, we're not like extreme. Although maybe some people I've said some extreme things, so maybe I shouldn't even
Fair enough.
Say that. But yeah. Well, I guess here's what I would say, maybe in conclusion, is that if we go back to our conversation with PJ on digital minimalism, you were kind of the what would the right word be? I feel like you and PJ were on opposite ends and I was somewhere between you, right? I think you were making the case for using digital technology effectively. And so I think to hear some of these things coming from you, I don't know. Would you say your perspective's changed, or
I don't know. That would be an interesting exercise for me to go back and listen to what I said on that podcast and listen to this one. I think that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember really what I said.
If I had to say, I think that you've still said some of the same things from what I remember in terms of like you can use it effectively and you should. But I think that it seems that this book has inspired you to be a little bit more minimal digitally. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Well, if you want to check that other one out, it's called Digital Minimalism with PJ Jedlebeck. I think it was December of 2022 or 2021.
I'm going to say 2021.
Gosh, it's almost been 2 years.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Indeed it does.
All right. Good convo. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.